This is the national public broadcast of Imam W.D. Muhammad, American Society of Muslim Leaders.
So it is my belief that the history of ancient Kush, included not only the continent of Africa, but also the peninsula of Arabia. I believe the Kushites, and I think you'll find enough evidence in history to bear this out, those people called the Kushites of Africa, I believe that their kingdom extended into Arabia. And other kingdoms of the Africans, I do believe, extended into Arabia. And the Yemenite people were part of that great ancient past, the great ancient history. Who knows, at one time maybe the Yemenites were also commanding not only Arabia and the territory there, but perhaps even a big portion of Africa. Who knows? Or we know little Japan took a big piece of Asia. Yes. And small Germany, small landmass, was on the march and about to take a big piece of Europe. Yes. So we know that small nations have had the power to expand and take over much of the territory within their sights or within their reach. This is history. We should understand this, that people that govern society, I'm not saying presidents, just people that govern society. Because many times it is the pressure that comes from the business people or from people in other areas of interest that brings the government to have a policy that hurt a particular people. And we know for a fact, from seeing with our own eyes, that most Americans, not African Americans, other Americans, fear African Americans coming together and having something independent as an idea or culture. They fear that. They fear it not because they're racist. They fear it because they know our history. And they think that they put themselves in our place. And they say, well, I know what we would do if we got a situation to grow and be independent. So they think that we would do the same. We are very special people. We're not like any other people I know. We are very special people. Even while there was slavery still in America, still in the United States or North America, there were African Americans who had identified with America, identified with the newcomers, and were doing their best to support the life and the future of the colonies of this country, while their people were slaves. They were friendly to the white bosses, they were friendly to the white government leaders, they befriended the white mansion owners or the white plantation owners, they befriended them, loved their children, cared for their white children, helped the whites, members of the white race that had us as slaves, they helped them raise their children, help them have a nice, pleasant home. They did that. We're very strange people. And I'm not saying this to criticize us or to take anything from us. I think that's a compliment to us, that we don't judge a race by the wrong ones in the race. And if we find a good person, we don't care if they're the same color of the person that enslaved the majority of us. If we find a good person, we judge that person one-to-one, one-on-one, based upon how that person treats us and how that person appears to us. I think that's a good thing. That's excellent. That means that there is an innocence, a human innocence in us that is very special. Praise be to Allah. Now we know that many did it to survive. They were just pretending. And that's what the white man knows too, that many of them were just pretending. That's why he fears us coming together in great numbers doing something on our own. They don't fear me. And they don't fear those that they believe think with me. But they fear others. And it's this religion that has brought about a development, a growth, and a maturing for our minds and our hearts and our souls that make it possible now for us to not only have faith in our existence here in America, but we have faith now in our possibility to rise up in the system of America and take positions of responsibility, like the position of mayor, position of governor, position of judge on the Supreme Court bench, position of banker, the position of developer, investor in the development of the society, position of scientist, policymaker for education, policymaker for politics and government. So we don't see any position or any opportunity in this country closed to us. We believe if we qualify, we can manage any of those positions. I feel that the people who think like we think, if we qualify, we can take over the responsibility for the United States itself. And I think that's very special for people with our history to come to that position only about, well, how long has it been since we were slaves? Not that long. A little better than 100 years. Say 100 and what, about 30 years or so? About 130 years or so, we were slaves. That is, slaves in our parents' loins. we were slaves. And now here in a relative short period of time, based upon what we see in history, or what we know of history, in a relative short period of time, there's Colin Powell, a man that some very powerful whites are looking at as a possibility for President of these United States, or Vice President of these United States. In fact, some of them are saying very openly that he's the man that they would like to see run for the presidency of these United States. An African American, Colin Powell, Chief of Staff. That's some progress. The prophet noticed that the Arabs were sunk deep in ignorance, bigotry, and disbelief. Superstitions. There was the degrading of the human soul. Instead of worshiping the one true God, people had begun to worship idols, deities, stones, stars, etc. The last prophet, the seal of the prophets, the messenger of God, servant and messenger of God, he came to bring the golden era of righteousness and enlightenment. Righteousness and enlightenment. Enlightenment means knowledge, useful knowledge. Knowledge that you need if you're going to have a nation, a government. If you're going to have trade with other people. If you're going to have a system, economic system. If you're going to have business, commerce, etc. If you're going to have hospitals, care for the sick. And a law to protect the people, their rights and their property. The knowledge that makes all that possible in a good way for us or for any people is enlightenment. Enlightenment. So at that time, there was not enlightenment. There was heathenism, idol worship, tribal feuding, ignorance, backwardness, etc. And it was through Muhammad the Prophet that the enlightenment came. Righteousness and enlightenment began to flourish as the Prophet made progress and as the message of the Quran reached more and more people in that particular area. Arabia and the vicinity and the nearby vicinity. He came to emancipate the human soul. Now, this is not my language. I told you I'm quoting the book. He came to emancipate the human soul. Now, we were told that we were emancipated. We were emancipated. Was 16, what was it? 1865. We were emancipated. As I said, about 130 years ago. 1865, 130 years. We were emancipated, we were told. But we had so much difficulty, so many problems. for us after 1865. It's been a rough road. For many, it's still a rough road. But we were emancipated. Many of us cry today like we were not emancipated. Many of us complain today like we're still slaves, like we're still in bondage, like we're still denied our freedom, like we're still denied opportunity. What could be the problem? What could be the answer? What could be it? The soul is not free. The soul is not liberated. The soul is not emancipated. You can take an animal and let him loose. Doesn't mean that he's going to have progress. He's an animal. Same thing he did in confinement, he's going to do it in freedom. He's just going to do more of it. But if you liberate a human being's soul, you bring about the possibility for that human being to come into human excellence, for the intellect to be established, the mind to be sharpened, the vision sharpened, the future brightened, faith in self to increase, nearness to God to be sought. Devotion to God will come as a result of that when you emancipate the soul. And God says, never will he change the condition of a people until they change what is bothering their soul. So our prophet is a true liberator. He liberates the soul, not just the flesh. Bilal was already liberated while he was still in shackles. Bilal, may God be pleased with him, radiallahu anhu. Bilal, the African, who was under his slave master when the prophet was preaching Islam in Arabia. And the slave master, he saw Bilal with his finger like this. And he saw Bilal, he heard Bilal saying things, and he knew that the message of Islam had reached Bilal. Then he wanted to break Bilal's spirit. So he began to torture Bilal physically. And Bilal was prepared to have his physical body burned in the hot sun with a big heavy stone on his chest, there stripped out there in the heat of the Arabian sun. He was willing to suffer that rather than to give up what he believes in. So was his soul enslaved? No. The prophet's message had reached him and his soul was liberated, but his body was still in bondage. And because his soul was liberated, God came to his aid through Abu Bakr. May God be pleased with him. But Abu Bakr learned of Bilal and he came and paid his master a very generous price that his master couldn't refuse. And Bilal's body was taken from bondage. But that wasn't any new freedom, really, for Bilal. The real, true, new freedom for Bilal was when he heard the message of Islam from the Prophet Muhammad and accepted it in his soul, accepted it in his heart. That was the real liberation for him. He didn't care whether the man destroyed his physical body or burned him to death. He was free. And that's what have made us great too. And that's what have made all people great. one of the leaders of this nation say, one of those who will keep back to and bringing about the freedom from the Britain, huh? From the Britain, Great Britain. He said, "Give me liberty or give me death." He wasn't talking about the freedom for the physical body. His physical body was already free. He wasn't restricted to any plantation. He roamed all over the colonies. But he saw himself a slave, not free. And he told the British government, the British kingdom, the British Empire. He told the, well, it wasn't called the Empire at that time, I don't think. He told the Great Britain, "Give me liberty," his stooges in America, in the colonies. He said, "Give me liberty or give me death." Now, we are free just like that man was. We are free just like that man was. He was free to go all over the colonies, go all over this land. We are free too, African American brothers and sisters. We are free to go all over this land. And I want you to stand up and say, "Give us liberty or give us death." Allahu Akbar. Yes. We want our souls to be free, so our intellects can grow and be established. And so our neighborhoods will change to neighborhoods that we can be proud of. So our image as a people will be changed. The prophet had to face all sorts of difficulties, threats, boycotts. Yes, they boycotted the prophet, restricted him and his followers to a small little area of land for 3 years, refused to have trade with him, tried to starve them out. During that terrible period, Lady Khadija, she died. It was just too hard, too difficult. May God be pleased with her, and I'm sure she's in the paradise, in the high place in paradise. They tried their best to offer temptations of wealth and women, beautiful women, to the last prophet, to dissuade him from preaching the religion, to bring him back to their idol worship, to ignorance and disbelief. He refused all of that. He refused money, wealth, and pretty women. He faced persecution after persecution, insult after insult, danger to his own life, the life of his loved ones, his close relatives and loved ones, also the loss of life. He braved their hostilities, their taunts, their harassments, their ridicule, and their evil design. He braved them in the most honorable way, in the most manly way. He went to the nearby town called Taif to preach to them, only to be insulted, harassed, stoned, wounded, and returned from that place bleeding. And the recorders of the history say that people heard the wet sound of blood in his slippers, in his sandals, as he was walking away from that place. He suffered all that. He knew they were ignorant. He was trying to appeal to their good senses. alone by himself, except for God as his company, until companions, relatives and companions, well, actually Lady Khadija was with him from the very beginning. And soon there was his friend Abu Bakr Siddiq, and his cousin Ali ibn Khattab, may God be pleased with them. And in time we know others came, but for about 11 years or more, he had only a very, very few followers. They were outnumbered so much by the disbelievers that their life was made very miserable in all those years. I wonder, would we still be here if we were tested like that? I don't compare myself with our great leader and model human being, the Prophet, but I can kind of compare the events in my life and in our life with the events in his life and in the first followers' life of our Prophet. I started out, and as long as everybody thought that I was going to go in the same old way of the Nation of Islam, they were ready to give me that money and everything else. But as soon as they found out I wasn't going to do that, they started saying, he's messing up everything. That he's messing up everything. And really, we haven't suffered. Nobody has been beating us up or torturing us, causing us physical loss of life or property. Nobody's been doing it. Well, they did cause us some lost property. But I don't blame that on the whole people. I blame it on Hoover's plan that was carried out. The FBI chief at that time, I blame it on him and those that went along and committed themselves to carry out that plan. And I blame it on you who came in as friends, but you were enemies, who came into the Temple of Islam, Nation of Islam, as friends, but really were enemies, serving the enemy. And you came in and made it possible for them to carry out that plan against us, the Temple of Islam at that time. So I blame you. I blame them, the Hoover plan, and I blame you who came among us and made it very easy for them to carry it out. But nobody will see Hoover that's hurt because they don't have the old Nation of Islam anymore. Nobody will see the infiltrators that came among us and were part of the leadership, national leadership. They won't see that. They say, he did it. He did. Talk about me. Talk to me. Now, let me continue on this, giving these notes. Our Prophet finally got an opportunity. God gave him friends in Medina, supporters from the neighboring city Medina, that is now called Medina El Munawwara. Medina El Munawwara. It means the city of enlightenment. the city of enlightenment, El Medina, Medina El Munawwara, the city of enlightenment, because the Prophet taught there and established the first Muslim community there in Medina. And from that city, the light shone, the light extended to many parts of the world, brought the revival and civilization back to the lost nations, the lost communities of men, and eventually sparked the rebirth of what is called the Renaissance.
For more on the ministry of Imam W. Dean Muhammad, call or write Ministry of W. Dean Muhammad, 1708-798-6750. All right, Ministry of Imam W. Dean Muhammad, Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. For Muslim Journal, see local distributor. And thanks for listening.